Lawyers representing students from Covington Catholic High School say they're considering defamation lawsuits against a host of media outlets and individuals. Students were harshly criticized online following that event at the Lincoln Memorial in Washington involving a Native American man and a group of Hebrew Israelites. That incident was more than 2 weeks ago, but there is still a debate on Twitter about exactly what happened. And our next guest says the story shows that Twitter is ruining American journalism. He wants journalists to stop tweeting. Farhad Manju is an op-ed columnist for The New York Times. Welcome.
Hi, good to be here.
So first of all, just lay out your argument. You say that Twitter is ruining journalism. How?
Yeah, I think it's doing it in a couple ways. One is just kind of ruining the image of journalists because there's a lot of reporters on Twitter who spend their lives on Twitter, and we tend to treat it a little like a clubhouse. People just kind of offer their takes, their opinions on the news. And because tweets are short and they don't offer a lot of room for nuance, and because people are just sort of being reflexive, the interface drives us to, I think, not really consider what we're typing and how it looks, and things can easily be taken out of context. So one is sort of the image of reporters. Two, though, and I think perhaps more important, is that we in the press, even though we may not like to admit it, we tend to use Twitter as kind of an assignment desk. If something is big on Twitter, you know, we put it on cable news, we put it mm-hmm. in the paper, we put it everywhere else. And I don't know, I mean, I don't think Twitter is sort of a reflection of the real world. And the problem is that we are all sort of stuck in it. We spend a lot of time there, and then we kind of take it as the real world and kind of look at what's happening on Twitter and make assumptions about what's happening in the rest of the world.
Well, I will say that, you know, as a journalist, I use it kind of as a wire service. I mean, you find out about something on Twitter and then you can go and check with actual sources and see if it's true before you go on the air with it. But you find out about it. There's a lot of different voices coming in. And then you also tend to think, and I think this goes to the point that you were just making, that, you know, you're hearing reaction from all over the place. So it's almost like you were out on the street asking people what they think. But in mm-hmm. fact, that's not the case.
Yeah, I mean, and I think it may have worked well that way at one point, but what has happened is that Twitter has become a magnet for activists, for marketers, for partisans of all kinds, for politicians, obviously. And so the impressions that you hear on Twitter are, you know, motivated for all of these reasons. And so you're not getting sort of the slice of, the American public or what the man or woman on the street thinks. You're getting kind of a motivated view. Mm-hmm. And it's difficult in the rush of tweets to figure out why someone is tweeting that way. Twitter's interface doesn't make it clear who these people are. You know, sometimes, you know, many times, tweets may become popular because they've been pushed up by bots, because they've gone sort of viral because of some, you know, Twitter mechanics we don't know. It's really hard to tell on Twitter why something is trending and whether it's trending for, you know, authentic reasons or for, completely made up reasons.
It's also kind of like a game where, you know, you let me think of a really pithy tweet to yeah. put out there to respond to this story. And, oh, look, I got 100 retweets or 1,000 retweets because of this thing that I wrote.
Yeah, I mean, to me, that is, I think, the worst thing about Twitter. Mm-hmm. And I say this as someone who loves that. I mean, I really have spent a lot of my life on Twitter, you know, during presidential debates, during all kinds of news events, where it became sort of a game. And you know, it's fun if you're in the news and you like the news and you follow the news. But I think that there, because it is a kind of a game where everyone's kind of competing to have the pithiest take on a thing, mm-hmm. it affects our thinking. I noticed that I was thinking in Twitter quips, and that's not really that productive unless if you're not aiming to be just a Twitter star and you're trying to, you know, produce good journalism in the world or try to affect the world in some larger way. Just thinking in Twitter quips, I think, is not good for you.
You've had some of your own bad moments on Twitter.
I mean, I feel like every day is a bad moment on Twitter. But yeah, I mean, I remember so many times there was that incident with that woman, Justine Sacco, whose tweet about going to South Africa was sort of taken out of context. She made a joke. Everyone kind of jumped on her about the you know, implicit racism in her joke, although I think people didn't get the context. She was on a plane going to South Africa. Everyone sort of pounced on it. I was one of them. There are many times where I've retweeted something that turned out to be not quite true. There are many times where I've had a very popular take on something that I, later on wish I'd reconsidered. And it's just, I think it's kind of unavoidable because to be good on Twitter, you have to be authentic. But sometimes, authenticity doesn't work with the kind of higher calling, of journalism, to be thoughtful and nuanced and to report and to, just kind of get a better and more comprehensive picture of the world.
Another thing that I wonder about when I watch journalists, because I follow mostly journalists on Twitter, is that there are people who I respect and I think do great work in their news organizations. And then I see them tweeting all day long and I'm thinking to myself, how is this person doing any reporting if they're spending all this time coming up with really clever tweets?
Yeah. I mean, one reason is because it's just really fun. There's an addictiveness to Twitter. I found that was the case for me. My job is to write columns, and I would write three words and then check Twitter, and write three words and check Twitter. And now that I don't have that compulsion anymore, I'm sort of better in all parts of life, even at my job.
How much of Twitter's influence do you think, and how much it's used right now, do you think has to do with the fact that the President of the United States uses Twitter constantly to send important messages to the public, and that he's basically put the presidential stamp of approval on this platform?
I think he has something to do with it, but I would imagine that if he stopped tweeting, nothing about the rest of how journalism works with regard to Twitter would change. People in the news were using Twitter more or less this way 3-4 years ago, mm-hmm. before Trump came on the scene. But you're right, he has put this, the seal of approval on it, and it does make it justifiable for reporters, especially political reporters, to be on there, because the tweets and the responses to the tweets are the story now, and the way that, other politicians respond to Trump happens on Twitter. Every political story now is just, this is what happened on Twitter today.
So your message to journalists is that they should stop tweeting so much and do a little more maybe just lurking on Twitter. It sounds like you're saying there's no way that people would just get off it altogether, but maybe they can take the first step, which is to spend a little less time on it. Do you think that is realistic given where we are right now in 2019?
I think it's realistic, but I think it's difficult. My path away from Twitter has been difficult and on and off, because it's really is a big part of the news. And if you're, a news reporter or just tied to the daily news cycle, you can't really ignore it. The way I use it now is I check it several times a day. Before I used to check it several times a minute. So mm-hmm. It's a huge change. And I use an app called Nuzzle, which sort of creates a kind of digest of what has happened on Twitter, in the last few hours, so that I can kind of keep tabs on it that way. And the other thing I do is I'm just much more deliberate about what I post. I type out a lot of tweets and then I don't post them. I just sort of save them to drafts. And there's something a little bit, it's like Nicorette gum. It sort of satisfies the urge to tweet, but I don't actually post it and change the world in any way.
Well, at least you still have another platform that's pretty big called the New York Times. So there's that if you decide to get off Twitter altogether.
Yeah, and that was one of the criticisms of my piece, which I think is legitimate. Journalists who don't work at the New York Times, journalists who are just breaking into the news business. It definitely worked for me that way. I think that Twitter became a professional network for me. It's my profile on Twitter is one reason that I advanced in my career. I think Twitter is important in the business of journalism. And if you don't work at the New York Times, it's much harder to decide not to tweet or to pull away from Twitter. Mm-hmm. I definitely recognize there's a sort of a position of privilege associated with my take there.
That is Farhad Manju, op-ed columnist for the New York Times. And we'll link you to his piece about this at hereandnow.org. Farhad, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks. Good to be here.